So I'd like to begin with a verse from the Tao Te Ching. If you realize that all things change, there is nothing you will try to hold on to. If you aren't afraid of dying, there is nothing you cannot achieve. Trying to control the future is like trying to take the master carpenter's place. When you handle the master carpenter's tools, chances are you're going to get hurt. So I want to welcome everyone to this new series on time. It's an interesting subject, and I look forward to spending these weeks exploring this topic. It really, what I think is very useful, and I hope you do as well, is to not get caught in a certain way we think of Dharma. The classical depiction of Dharma, we certainly have gone over in the Four Noble Truths and other expressions. But to look at different ways that the Dharma can be seen and understood and perceived actually opens our inward doors to greater and greater understanding of what of how this whole thing sort of fits together. And I think the issue of time is one which conceivably can open a lot of doors of understanding and of insights into what of how we seem to be held in place, fixed in our particular dimension of time, and whether this dimension has a reality that defies an exit, or whether it's always available and we just choose not to take it. I remember, I don't know why this is coming to mind, but I'm going to say it. I remember a Wizard of Id cartoon in which Rodney was down in a dungeon and the king was up on top of this carved out dungeon area. And there were two doors. And the wizard king said that Rodney, choose one of those two doors. Behind one door lies a dragon in which you will be instantly roasted to death. And behind the other door is a beautiful woman. Now choose. And Rodney looks up and says, I choose the beautiful woman. I like that. But we keep choosing for some reason or the other, we keep choosing the dragon and opening that door. And so I think it's very important to explore this area, and I'm going to try to make it as clear as possible. Now there's a whole relativity to time that we may or may not touch. So happens that I like the science behind the physicality of time and the relativity of time. But that's really not where this particular talk or generally the series is going. So it's not time by the watch. It's not clock time that we're going to be focusing in on. It's what is time internally, our inward clock of time. What is that? The past and the future, so to speak. And that sense that time is real within us, has a real abiding and a real meaning and a real value. Because that's what we have to challenge. That is where the whole of the Dharma resides, within that challenging quality. So I'm going to try to make this approachable and not too abstract by using as concrete of an example as I can. And so I will invite us to explore this using two axes, the x-axis, which is the horizontal axis, and the y-axis, which is the vertical axis. Okay? So I just want to lay this metaphor out so that we can get a sense of where we're going in all of this. So let's look at time in terms of the x-axis, the horizontal axis. Now, the horizontal axis has a zero point. It also has a duration, a distance from the zero point that goes to the left and the distance that goes to the right. Now, I would call the zero point the present, and I would call anything out to the right-hand side as the future, and anything to the left-hand side of that zero point, the past. Now, we spend most of our life in the story of ourselves. The story of ourselves is along that x-axis, traveling perhaps from the left-hand side to the right-hand side, or going back and immersing ourselves in indulgence in the past, or the anticipation and expectation of the future. We spend very little time. In fact, we don't really give much relevance to the zero point. In fact, it's kind of like it's a waste of time, literally, to be at the zero point, because we're not being fed at the zero point. Where we're being fed is in the movement along that x-axis, and what we can accomplish, and what we can produce, and what we can become. And because if we ever rest upon the zero point, we feel impoverished. In fact, the present from this x-axis is very impoverished, because it's up against the rock of the future and the hard place of the past. And we feel very narrowed and confined within that, and we feel that zero point is very meaningless to us. It doesn't hold any real meaning or purpose or relevance to us. Occasionally, we have a period of calm and quietude in ourselves, and we really appreciate the smell of the roses or the beautiful sight that's in front of us. But oftentimes we use that in order to tell a story about this beautiful sight that we saw, and how beautiful it was at such and such an event. We use it as part of the storyline of me, don't we? Not for itself. Not for itself. I can remember I was just out of college. I was driving across the country, and I stopped at Yellowstone Park in Grand Teton Mountains, just south of Yellowstone, and I came upon the Grand Teton Range as it opened up the vista of that, and I just couldn't believe how beautiful that was. I had been raised my whole life in the Midwest, and I had never seen mountains like that. And there was nobody around I could talk to, and I kept waiting for a car to stop so that somebody could enjoy the moment with me, so that I could express the beauty that I was seeing. And nobody did, and so dejectedly, I got in my car and drove away. Because it didn't mean anything for itself. It meant only what or how I could join, or how I could elaborate on it, how I could explain how important this beauty was to me, on and on. So even when we rest momentarily at the zero point, it really fits into a kind of tale of ourself, doesn't it? And we often are in meditation. Meditation is really the moment in which we are inviting the zero. Let's understand the point of why we meditate. We're inviting the zero in, but we don't hold it to that. We tie whatever experiences occur in that zero point to the tale of ourselves, which is not the zero point. We talk about how this meditation was better than the last one, which is a whole extraction, an extrapolation from that zero. We talk about the meaning this meditation had for me, how important this retreat was, and on we tie it to the story. So we never let the zero be the zero, not on the x-axis, not on the dimension of time. And yet the whole of meditation is to be able to rest in that zero. Now, it's very interesting. I could spend a whole talk on just that subject, but moving along here, is that all problems are derived from the x-axis. If you and I have a problem, have a struggle, are in conflict, are suffering in some way, look toward time because that's the culprit. That's the reason we are suffering. We are somehow engaging in time. We are somehow trying to manipulate the x-axis, prolong it. You see, let us understand that the x-axis from 0 point to the left as far as you want to go into the future and to the right as far as you want to think about the past is total abstraction. Total abstraction. This is just thought. This is just thinking. We're thinking time into creation. And for most of you who are experienced meditators, and I don't mean to begrudge that fact if you aren't, but one of the things that happens as the practice deepens is that you begin to see that fact, that it all happens. Everything in life is happening from the 0 point. We just keep perceiving it differently. We just keep thinking our way out of that 0. We come out of the meditation, and a skilled and experienced meditator will even know that thought is happening now. It's not happening at some other point. But then we come out of the meditation and we get seduced into the content of thought, believing the content, and then we are racing to the left or to the right of the 0 point. And suddenly it becomes all very confusing as issues around my childhood arise or expectations about my future or what I want to become. And all of the different ways that we're pulled to the left or pushed to the right become very concrete and real as our agenda starts playing itself out from making these thoughts into something they have never been. Which is that the fact is that they have no reality outside of 0. They are arising now. All things of mind are arising now. Nothing is happening in the time frame that you perceive it or invest in it. Nothing. The past, where is it? If it were, please show it to me. Because it should be obvious. You should be able to pin it down. Give it some point of reality. You can show me the 0 point just by going like this. But you can't show me any other time frame. You see, but we lose ourselves within the belief of that, and when we do so, then the whole thing carries its own structure, its own weight, its own three-dimensionality, its own perspective, its own thingness. The closer we come to 0, all things come to 0 within 0. The further out we go from 0, the more thingness, the more history they have, the more future hope we hold for them, the more concrete everything is. And the quieter we are is another way of saying it, because the quietness is the absence of thinking, or another way of perceiving it, seeing thought is happening from 0 is also quietude. When we're there and we rest, then all things are ephemeral. Nothing holds the unshakable thingness that they did when we have thought them into creation. And so you get it's very interesting how time creates the world. Now it also, perhaps inevitably so, the 0 point doesn't hold me. It's just a small thing. 0 only holds itself. It only holds itself. This 0 point is what in Zen or in other traditions of Buddhism, including this one, we call emptiness. Emptiness is 0. Emptiness is that nothing holds what we think it holds. What does the world hold when we move out on the x-axis? It's what the mind says the world holds through its thinking. come back into zero where the mind is quiet and it doesn't hold what we thought it did. And it comes into something very... But you see, when we start approaching quietude in meditation and come to zero, we often get frightened. Why? Because of the conditioning we have to think that, remember to think that, all purpose and meaning is about the extension of that x-axis, not the zero point. In fact, I find no purpose whatsoever or no meaning whatsoever. You can't find meaning within the zero point. Meaning means that life means something beyond zero, that it has a certain orientation, a certain perspective, a certain importance. But in zero, none of that is held. And so we think, what good is that? And that's often what keeps us kind of leaning in our meditation, so that we can make our meditation meaningful through our lean, through our thinking. And we can do all sorts of distorting things to our meditation in the leaning to the left or leaning to the right by using our meditation in as an accompanying ourselves with it. And so we're going to become socially engaged Buddhist, or we're going to do something else that is important to us, all through the leaning on the thought line, the x-axis, away from zero. What about just this? See, this now the whole thing gets very funny, and I'll get to it in just a minute. Not quite ready to bring in the other axis yet, because I just want us to see how disorienting zero is. We have to understand why it feels so difficult to sit and do nothing, which is what meditation is. Why it's so difficult to let the mind be rather than to constantly re-engage it and make it into an expression of something, of a production that I need. Because it doesn't hold me, it doesn't hold my story, it doesn't hold my meaning, it doesn't hold the importance, the self-importance that I have given my life. The other thing that the zero doesn't hold is language. Language holds the x-axis together as an x-axis. In fact, if we extend this out a little bit, the world is the x-axis. Language holds the world together to what we know it to be. It's a little bit like serial Christmas lights. You know, when lights are strung in serial order, if you unscrew one of the bulbs, all the lights go out. When we are sitting in zero, all the lights are out. Screw it in and think one thought, and all the lights come back in. All the lights. All of them are serially connected. Everything. Everything we see, everything we know. It's a world, the Buddha said, and he meant it literally, is manifested in this fathom-long body. That's it. So you can see how indebted we are towards the x-axis. And I don't want to any way, you see, it's not a question of scolding ourselves into the zero point. It's not a question of shooting ourselves because we know we should do this. It's not a question of that. In fact, the quicker we release the need for that kind of super egoic overview, the better our meditation will be. This really is a practice of understanding, of seeing the value and the limitation of living a life on either axis. And we have to do that. We cannot do that through some sense of pressure, self-pressure we place on ourselves. And so I'm very acutely aware of whether someone is leading their practice with a should, with a have to, because it just won't work. It just won't work. It means that the inherent need to examine one's life, the intrinsic need to examine one's life is not there, that we're trying to scold ourselves into it. And it doesn't work that way. It doesn't work. It works through actually perceiving the advantages and the disadvantages of the x-axis. What are the advantages? Well, the advantages are I get everything. And I get my identity within everything. Well, that's a huge advantage. In fact, our history books are laden with those stories. So let us not in any way belittle what we're getting from the x-axis by moving away from zero. It's tremendous, tremendously important. But what aren't we getting? That's a fair question. Isn't that a fair question? Well, we get the fact that at some point we perceive that what we're doing is creating an illusion. We're creating a thought-filled world and bypassing zero. That means that we will never be at rest because it's only the zero point that's at rest. Shall I call it contentment without measure? And if that means nothing to you, then it means that's not that I'm not in any way suggesting that it should, but if it doesn't, it means we have more to look at in terms of our restlessness, in terms of our anxiety, in terms of our busyness, in terms of our self-promotion. Because until we're tired of that, the zero means nothing. In fact, we run from it. We run from the zero. I was giving a talk last night at the beginning class, and sometimes I get out there for beginners, I think. And then we stop the talk and we have a walking period where people can sort of settle with the talk. And I just noticed that a number of people flocked to their cars and drove away. You know, and if we had a break here, I'm sure some of you would do the same. Because when we start hearing this, there's a threatening quality to listening to this that I fully respect. We don't have to worry, though. The world isn't going to go away as long as we're promoting it. It's self-promoted. So as long as you want it, you'll have it. And you'll get both sides of it. You'll get the advantage, you'll get the limitation of it. And as long as reality is not critical questions are not asked from reality, and as long as we don't really look at it, we can stay very blinded by the assumptions that it's real. In fact, it's the Dharma's equivalent to don't ask, don't tell. Don't ask any questions about reality, and it will say nothing to us about what it really is. But everything that we so long for in the world comes to fruition at the zero point. So we have to understand that we're giving up a lot. We're giving up an awful lot. To people who are interested in moving to this new axis, which now I will bring in as the y-axis, the vertical axis. Verticality has no distance in terms of east-west, right? I say get the data down of the x-axis, and you'll be drawn to the y-axis. Get it down. See what it is. See where we have given ourselves away. See the trouble we have caused. Remembering that all problems, and this is a huge thing, that's why I talk so often about radical accountability. And if you haven't heard that word, go back to one of my talks, because really the teaching depends upon that as a foundation. Unless we understand that the problems we have in the world are self-inflicted and are not caused by circumstances and my boss and, you know, me and my poor inadequate me, until we understand that, until we're finished with that kind of self-pity, we'll never be drawn to the zero. But as soon as we see that it's all self-inflicted, that pain is self-inflicted, we get so hungry for that zero. It's like, let me out of this, not in aversion, but in just disgust and being fed up, being I'm over this, I don't want this anymore. Where the heart rises to the occasion. So let me talk a little bit about the y-axis. Now the y-axis has only one meeting point to the x-axis, doesn't it? I mean, this is, all of us went through school, x-axis, y-axis, it meets at the zero point. That's the only place, the only intersection between the two axes. So let me just play this out a little more, just because I think it visually represents the problem. Now, the y-axis has no language. Language comes from the thinking along the x-axis, so it's completely still. It only intersects to the x-axis at the zero point. And clinging keeps those dimensions very separate. Now, clinging, it's interesting. You see, this is what I mean by when I invite you to look in this new way, dharmically in this new way, you can begin to think, wait a second here. It just changes the perspective, and perhaps insights can come from that new vantage point. Clinging is moving to the left or right along the x-axis. You want something, I want something, you're reaching out beyond what is actually here, which is the zero point. The zero point contains only what is here and only what is now. Everything else, which is mental fabrication, has to be a leaning along the x-axis at one point, right? Now, the fact is, I hope this isn't too abstract, so just stay with me. And if it is too abstract, let it go, and then at some point you can pick me back up again. Wherever we are in our clinging, whatever we're thinking to, actually the y-axis is cutting right through at that point. Because remember that all thought is happening now. We just believe in the content. And when we believe in the content, we miss the vertical intersection that's happening. So actually the x and y-axis are identical. There's never a moment. Never a moment in which we aren't upon the zero point. It's the perspective of our thinking, toward our thinking, that creates the whole dynamic in which we assume and believe we are. So therefore, where do we have to go to meet this intersection? This then is urban Buddhism. Nowhere. Nowhere. You're there already. But the realization of that means that the negation of our thinking. We have to understand how our thinking is holding us, obscuring that fact. It's not good enough just to have a philosophy that I'm free already. It means nothing. Nothing. But let me show you what it does mean when you realize that. You see, it's very interesting because we'll have teachers that say, okay, practice hard. Okay, I'll practice hard. Form is, will get you there. Be like a life raft. And then all of a sudden, we have teachers that say, don't practice any form. Just be empty. Don't have to do walking meditation. Don't have to do sitting. Just do anything. And you're already there. And we love that because we don't have to put forth any effort. And it makes sense to our heart, and it sounds okay, and so now I'm not going to do anything. And then we have then created a philosophy of emptiness. I can do anything. I'm already free. I can do anything to anyone. It's already perfect. Which is a devastating philosophy to humanity and to other species and to the earth. You see, because those two axes, the x-axis and the y-axis, are actually the same axis, form is form and emptiness is emptiness and it doesn't. And everything matters and doesn't matter at the same moment. And so practice diligently, and it's all empty. See, the mind can't hold both of those. But until the circle is complete in Zen, until the circle is complete, we will be fighting one view against the other, the x-axis against the y-axis. We'll pit one against the other. And we'll be creating all sorts of havoc because the zero point where both axes meet in complete perspective, in complete orientation, doesn't require philosophy whatsoever. Now let me just show you, I'm going to just change metaphors as I have, I'm prone to do. Because I want to show you how difficult it is to see the y-axis from the x-axis, to see the vertical from the horizontal. I think this is a very good analogy of that. Take a photograph of whatever you want and look at the tail of the photograph. Well, there's my Aunt Mary and I was 6 years old and I remember that picnic and all of that. So look at the story of the photograph tells. It tells 1,000 words, right? Now, as you're looking and seeing the story, try to also see the paper on which the photograph is printed. And you'll find it almost impossible. Because as soon as you lose the story, you lose the paper. As soon as you hold the story, you lose the paper. And as soon as you just see the paper, you lose the story. The crossing of these two axes is that we hold both. You see, I think it's actually a very good metaphor for the difficulty. To try to see the paper and don't hold the story is so hard because the mind keeps generating the story. And so every time we look, perceive, think, every time we hear, the perceptions, the recognition factor, all of that is blinding us to the axis that's moving through the zero point, the vertical axis. Look, when we look out, everything is known to us. It's like the photographs everywhere. How can we see on which all this is based when everything is so rich, holds such opportunity for us, such purpose, such delight, such meaningful? I could do, I can be. How can we see anything when there is as much fearing and wanting that we're investing into the x-axis? Essentially, we're blinded. And so the way the Dharma works is that we begin to step and look at critical issues that we have always believed to be true, that we have just been going on endlessly. We just have believed since time immemorial. We start looking at critical issues of the x-axis and what it offers me, and to see whether this constant reaching, constant movement, constant wanting, constant avoidance, constant fear is the way we want to live. Because if we live on the x-axis, we have to live in accordance with the mind's law, not the reality's law. And the mind's law is that it's going to inevitably crash, as I mentioned, because we're using the carpenter, master carpenter's tool. And we don't know anything about that. We don't know anything about reality. We only know about what our mind's projection, imaginative imagination says, what we want, what we fear. Now, I want to talk just a little bit about meditation. Because meditation, as I mentioned, speak about meditation in different ways, and now I'm going to talk about it as cutting dependency on time. It's getting to the zero point. At first, the first thing we do in meditation is establish a beachhead on the zero point. We call it our breath. And the breath is happening at zero, as all things are, but that is a physical sensation that really doesn't require a lot of thought, and it's autonomic, so that means that it's involuntary, and it goes on without our will, which is also very important, because if it went on only with our will, we would think the whole thing was will-driven. So we establish some attention to get a beachhead into zero. And then we fight. I always am humbled by a beginner, because I lose touch with what a beginner's mind, how difficult it is. And last night at the class, one woman said, you know, I was introducing emotions and how to experience emotions and not getting meshed in the content of one's emotional life. And she said, I can't imagine experiencing an emotion without my story. I can't imagine it. And you know what I said? Most people in this room can't. And maybe most people in this room can't. It's that difficult. It's that hard to understand what this beachhead, to establish this landing zone where we are actually allowing ourselves not to be. But you see, what we meet when we meet at the zero point is a guarded army, which in Buddhism is called sanskaras, or conditioned tendencies that keep us off zero. The conditioned mind is armored to keep us out of zero, because in zero lies all of our conditioning. And to land on zero, we have to go through the conditioning quality of the mind. We have to re-perceive that conditioning as happening now. But we've never perceived, always our perception of the conditioning has been that it's true and it says something about me. Now we have to re-perceive it as saying nothing about me. And that's like, what do you mean it says nothing about me? My whole life it said something about me, now I'm just going to a lecture and suddenly it means nothing about me? You've got to be kidding. Nobody believes that. We all think it sounds good. But that's what it means to come back to zero, is that we come back through the conditioning of all of what we believe about ourselves. That's how we land in zero. That's what keeps us off the mark. That's what keeps us off the mark. So how are we using our practice? I want to ask you, how are you using your practice? Do you think you're going to escape the difficulties of your conditioning? Then you're going to be on your x-axis. Or are you going to welcome those and just orient yourself differently to whatever that conditioning might express? Whatever, doesn't matter. And not to take any of it as a personal representation of self. That's what it means to get to zero. That's just the beachhead, people. That's just getting yourself gathered sufficiently so that you even know what the present moment is. But what we begin to see is that observation has no time. And opinionation, which is the near enemy of observation, is all about time. Evaluation, judgment, condemnation, comparison, all of it. And laced with our observation is opinionation. We opinionate, we're judging everything we see. But remembering that the quieter we become, the more we can see from zero, the more we can hold that opinionation and see it through observation. The quieter we become, the clearer our observation becomes, and the less noisy, the less opinionated it becomes. And finally, we have sufficiently touched zero, and we aren't about to let ourselves go off into the axis any longer. Because it makes no sense. We're not going to invite the pleasure-pain principle back in our life. We're not going to invite our conditions back into our life, recondition ourselves, and move on as if nothing has happened. When we are marked, when we know zero, there's a mark that happens within us. We are marked for life. We can never be justifiably satisfied outside of it. And my wish for each of us here is to be so marked. Because once that happens, the game is over. No matter how long it takes for us to gather the courage to rest, the game is over. But let us be clear what the game entitles us to and what we have to go through in order to access it. So how do we use our practice to reconnect to the vertical? How do we use our practice to take a beachhead in zero, you see? How do we disempower the horizontal dimension? That's another way of saying it. Really, we don't have to establish ourselves in zero. We just have to disempower the horizontal dimension. and we find ourselves in zero. Because remember, we've always been in zero. It's just that we think our way out of it. So if we can disempower the thinking, we'll land where we are. Does that make sense? Get interested in the X-axis. It's your life. What's it doing for you? Has it paid off in the way it's been promised? Has it? Has it given you what you think you were going to get? Or do you say, well, it's because I haven't been up to it, which probably most of us have some tendency towards. It's the life is there. I mean, the good life is there. I just haven't been worthy enough for it or able enough or circumstantially enough. Nonsense. If any one of you have rested in the good life forever, raise your hand, please. Because that's what we're trying to get to by using the X-axis. Let me suggest that that good life is in the zero, at the zero point. Let me suggest that the heart is fully caressed in wonder. And we've been fighting, but when you extend the X-axis out, you've just extended our knowing out, because that's just thinking. Thinking about things produces more thoughts about things. That's more knowing. So you go that direction, you're just out on the X-axis. But if you come in to the zero, as you pull that in, you come into wonder. You come into the mystery. You come into beauty. You come into awe. You come into inspiration. Maybe that's the direction towards zero. Not forcing ourselves to be on the breath, but inviting wonder in whatever we see. Encouraging the mystery rather than the knowing. Asking from time to time, because we have built this thing on the supposition of me, I think it's worth questioning whether the me is existent. Who am I? What is this? And when the past comes up, not to take it so personally, but to bring it into zero. Let the past be seen for what it is, as a thought. Let the future be seen for what it is, as thinking. When we know that the content, when we free ourselves from the content and see life and see all processes of mind as processes, then that which holds all the processes of the mind is zero. And then time falls into now. And we'll stop promoting it. We'll stop encouraging it. We'll stop, most importantly, needing it. And we'll rest. Thank you all. Can we sit for a minute or two? So if there are any questions about anything or comments, I would be happy to do that or see what I could answer. Yes.
I think I understood the horizontal.
Yes.
And the zero point. But when you started to describe the vertical.
Yes.
I think that the vertical is mindful. Curious if there is something that extends up and down, or if it's just presence that gets pulled back to the zero when it becomes aware it's along the x-axis.
Okay, so the question is about the vertical axis, and again, let's not get too caught up in the geometry of it all. I mean, it's really supposed to be pulling us into the experience of it. Question is whether the vertical is mindfulness. I would say mindfulness is the beachhead established by self. Right? Don't you try to be mindful? I'm trying to be mindful, right? I've got to be mindful. So there's a whole encasement around being mindful, and mindfulness is the trying to touch the experience of life. But when we're so anxious about and effortful about our mindfulness, we can put so much weight and effort in the mindfulness that we stray off of where the x-axis meets the y-axis, and we start thinking about what we're going to do with the mindfulness once we are fully mindful, or how we will be glamorous people being mindful, or whether we can be what enlightenment will look like and all of that, right? Or we can be so tense with the mindfulness that we get caught up with this kind of super egoic criticism of how we need to put in more effort and the shoulds and all of that. And I would say in there somewhere, in all of that inward criticism and judgment, there's a beachhead that's trying to be formed. The beachhead is awareness. Mindfulness, I see, is often self-produced. Awareness is what's already here. And so for us to release the need to be somebody, we will find what inherently resides without that somebody, which is awareness. So I would say that the x-axis, which is timeless, if the y-axis, which is time, the x-axis is time, the y-axis is timeless. Now, timelessness has an infinity quality to it, but it's not in time. So I extend that y-axis infinitely in both directions, because there's enormous space, but not distance. Right? So it doesn't meet. There's space without distance. Distance is measurement and therefore time, right? But space is not that. It's infinity. And that's all now. So that's why I call it an axis, although it's really a point, right? Okay, so from time to time, release the need to be somebody and see what's there. What's there when I'm not so anxious about myself? In those moments of subtle quietude, when I'm not trying to work the system, to work the meditation system so strongly, when I'm not trying being so anxious about my spiritual development, which is really ego adaptation. See, this thing has nothing to do with the x-axis. That's the point. And we try to work it from the x-axis. The x-axis is just going to frustrate you, because we're trying to work our meditation as we have our lives. And it simply doesn't work that way. It works very well in the opposite direction, which is to relax, relax. See what's here when there is relaxation, full embodied relaxation. What's left? It's very interesting what comes out when we are not engaged in our own practice. That doesn't mean that we allow our minds to wander. That's being engaged in something else. That's turning away from the practice. You stay with the practice, but let yourself release yourself, need to be yourself. When you release your need to be yourself, but not turn away in contempt or disgust or boredom or whatever, what comes out? What is left? What is left? I find that a very interesting question. Everything is left. Everything is left. So what does it mean? What does it mean? See, I like these kind of things. I guess those of you who don't wouldn't be here. So I like challenging myself that way, because I feel that anything that's ever been understood in spiritual philosophies over the centuries has to be also available to me. I have never, ever seen myself less than my consciousness less than able to understand anything that's ever been understood, period. And neither is yours. That's all just ego inadequacy. So I say, okay, let me see. If people have written about this, let me see it. It's either there for me or it's not. So I'm going to take that on. Let's look at it. So you have to do some real work here. I mean, the work is not to let, because the x-axis, the axis of thought becomes as subtle for a long period of time as the awareness that holds it. And so we just keep landing on thought, on a fixed reference for ourselves, and therefore think that we're in a place that we've never been, which we are. We're quieter than we've never been. But that doesn't mean we're off the playing field of thought. It just means thought is as subtle as the quiet that we have now engendered. So I have to be even quieter, because I know I can. I know that awareness is more primary than the thinking. If it weren't more primary than the thinking, it couldn't recognize thought. Thought would recognize it. But because I can recognize thought, it must be more primary. It's like when anyone walks into the room, the floor holds you. It's here before you. So too, awareness is here before anything of the mind arises. And therefore, it can be seen. It can see anything that arises, no matter how subtle. So, okay, that's it then. I know that. I'm not going to jabber to myself anymore. Let me see this. I'm not going to dispute it. Got it. I'm not going to doubt it or say I can't do it. That's all just... You can spend your whole life doing that, trying to prepare yourself for the y-axis. You haven't got the enough samadhi. You haven't got enough this or enough that. I'm tired of that. That's just burdensome. That's why we are urban Buddhists. We take our place here and we say, okay, I don't know if I can... Wait a minute, that's doubt. You see, you don't let anything that catches you and starts pulling you to the past of all the failed ways that your tasks have been or whatever. We don't move, and that's doubt. We see everything from the zero point. Doubt. Until it gets very quiet. See, the mind doesn't have anything else it can throw at you, because we've taken our stand and said, I don't care. I ain't moving. Now the mind it's given its best shot. It still has maybe fear, but I can see that too. Now the whole thing gets, wait a second here. Suddenly there's a shift in quietude, so that we are no longer, we are that which holds all things. We become the zero. It's not that we observe from zero. We become zero. We become zero because we always have been zero and have fictitiously represented ourselves through thinking to be different than that. Now the whole thing opens up because I'm willing to be zero. And if we're willing to be zero together, this room could get very quiet very quickly. There's a lot of words. I don't know why I'm using so many words and so many analogies and so many X's and Y's, because it's really to get us here to be quiet together. That's where all of this is supposed to be pointing. Nothing denied, nothing asserted. Yes.
Yes. Really,
Yes. Yes. Yes, yes.
And so there has to be sort of, and I felt kind of frustrated by it because I was like, why can't I see the present and listen to this? Why can't there be this kind of singing and listening to language? There sort of feels like there has to be either leaning forward or backward in order to reference something to understand language.
Yes. Yes, your question is about, your question is about language. And how language rises and falls at some point as we get quieter, language rises and falls within that base camp or beachhead of zero. And then there is a sense that why can't this all? You see, as soon as we bring that forth, we're back into language. We have to be very careful. The sense of self isn't going to discover zero. And if you argue with why you aren't, you're really bringing forth language. See, it's that subtle. Wherever it is that you haven't seen through yourself, that's what's going to come forward to present yourself. Wherever it is that language still is identified with emotionally, psychologically, in terms of our pain or our past, when we get close to zero, that's what's going to pull us out. Is that which we are still identified with in terms of language. So, first thing we have to do is to understand that the sense of self does not exist without language. There is no self without language. That language substantiates me. And so, if I'm arguing with whatever it is that's arising in the moment, that argument creates the division which keeps me out of zero. Okay, so what if I don't care whether I lean forward or backward? Not that I don't care, not that I'm whitewashing it, but that I'm not going to get lost in a reaction to it. So that if I'm thinking and I'm out of zero, I'm out of zero. That's okay. Holding it without holding all of that reaction is zero. So not to divide out. You see how subtle this is? You're getting it, aren't you? Right. Okay, see? I like it when somebody follows me, actually, in some of these diatribes. So when we hold ourselves out as surveyors of, we'll never get in. I wish I could do this. I don't have the talent. This is the end of my talents. I don't have the talent to say it in a way that's so simple that everybody just, you know, just immediately gets it. All I have is words, and it just keeps beating me away from what I'm pointing to. Anyway. So I don't make anything out of anything. I don't make any problems, no matter what. Get lost in thought for 20 minutes. No problem. As soon as I make a problem out of getting lost in 20 minutes, then I have somebody who has a problem that's got to get over that problem so that I can have 20 minutes in which I'm not lost. And this is the way it is. So I'm not going to make any problems. I'm on to that one. No problems. Now I'm not a problem maker anymore. Okay, I think that's it for this evening. Thank you all very much.